And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, unfeared. We showed no fear at Freedom Fest. No fear at Narco Vegas. And Tempachote and I went up there Thursday. We stayed, came back Monday night, and there was a bunch of activity. And Tim and I are going to talk about it and recap Freedom Fest and Narco Vegas for you. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Good morning, everybody.
Okay, let's go ahead. You got to meet some of the boys. You know, there's some money. Did you get any contacts? Are you talking to people and such since you came back from Vegas?
I'm still trying to rewind a little bit. I think everyone's making their trip back, so today I'll be making some calls. But actually, probably one of the better leads I got was from some random guy who was there for a woodworking conference who recognized some of the people that I was with being on YouTube, and he wasn't even there for Freedom Fest or Anarcho Vegas.
Oh, yeah, I remember that guy. He there was a conference at the Vegas Conference Center, their big giant where they have like Consumer Electronics Show kind of thing. They had a woodworking thing going on there. I would have enjoyed that. I was like, wow, where is it? I'll go. Well, it's at the big $1 billion kind of, all right, never mind. But the guy had recognized someone, and there's a bar area there at the Paris and just hanging out, and boom, he's like, Tim, what's up? You know, so I need some help.
Well, to be clear, it wasn't really me that he recognized. It was actually like Josh and John and Dan Dix. But maybe someday we'll get up there.
Well, so. he needed some help. You know, he wanted to understand what was going on. And my whole thing has been the services that you're providing. It's not just Bitcoin. You know, it this method of being able to, but it's all predicated on this idea of the man's got access to my money to begin with. So, I mean, if you're going to be dealing with this system, they need to talk to Tim, but I'd just as soon not. And, you should listen to the Jimmy Song interview I did last night.
I'm looking forward to it.
It was over a couple hours of, you know, and I had James Corbett on the podcast right before him, and he goes, well, ask him this question, you know. So it was something about what happens, how are money made after the block rewards stop and so on, which is, you know, fees and whatever. But it was an interesting conversation, and privacy is out the window for a lot of these guys. It's just not a thing. They don't care. And I go, okay, well, I guess I won't be using Bitcoin then, you know, for that. And it's not a store of value because it's a currency. It's because of something else, you know, security, I guess, or whatever. But I don't think that the point that I was making is I don't think Bitcoin is going to be the Uncle Sam money. It's not going to be currency money. It's not going to be something. It's not going to be compliant enough. Certainly not as compliant as the Libra, if it even goes. And for Facebook to announce that means they already got a plan. They're going to do something. So I'm going, I need bubblegum money. Who's going to do that? And it's not going to be Bitcoin. So I don't know what its role is going to be. I have no idea. You're either going to be, you know, anarchist enough or compliant enough. And I'm not sure where Bitcoin is on that. And I didn't really get a clear answer.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I paid for my Anarcho Vegas sponsorship through Bitcoin Cash. And part of the reason why is I hate not knowing how long things are going to take to confirm. I did a shape shift probably a week ago, and it took me I think, over an hour to convert from Bitcoin to Bitcoin Cash. I mean, just mainly because of the Bitcoin side of that equation. Whereas through Bitcoin Cash, it's not even philosophical. It's just actual practical use that one does it immediately, and one could take anywhere from immediately to a day. I mean, it's just, you know, whatever the whims of what the network is feeling that day. And that's not very good for new adoption. You know, if you're trying to tell people it's fast, it's quick, and it's cheap, and it's not fast, quick, or cheap.
Yeah, and they don't care. You know, it was 2.5 hours of he don't care. You know, so I had a pleasant conversation with him. I like him. You know, we had a good time. But yeah, he's the guy Tone's always talking about. You know, the smartest people in Jimmy Song. You know,
so the man behind the curtain.
Yeah, you know, so it was a good conversation. Well, he's a professor, I guess, in Texas. He speaks. You know, he lectures there, and he goes around and so on. So the guy's got skills. But they're not answering my base questions. You know, one of the things, let's talk about Freedom Fest and what your impression was. Now, we go in, we start talking to people, we go to the different presentations and so on. We set up, we pass out all our stuff, we say, yo, what's up, go to some of the seminars and so on. But Freedom Fest, what did you expect? What did you see? What do you think is going to happen next cycle?
Well, I basically colloquially dubbed it as Frank Fest, as a ode to Dr. Frank, because it seemed like it was everything that was right in his right up his wheelhouse. Yeah. But it would have been a place where probably 3 or 4 years ago it would have been definitely my crowd. But it was definitely, I sort of dubbed these people as, I don't say like these people, but I have a term where I call it FINO. So instead of Rhino, it's Freedom in name only, whereas people were, you know, we went to that one presentation where probably 70-80% of the room wanted to build the wall across the entire Mexican border.
Hundreds of people, the majority, the big debate on immigration. You had, what's that black woman's name?
It's Candace Owens.
Yeah, Candace Owens. Candace Owens, very articulate, you know, freaking, you know, beautiful, kicks butt, and red meat for the crowd, man. They just get them going. Wayne Allen Root gets up, and he was really proud of himself, man. He was happy he had a crowd, man. They were cheering for, yeah, man, freaking wall, you know. And Trump. And we had Gary Franchi on yesterday, so it's Trump. Trump, 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 been better good to me. But with the night before, just so that'd be Tuesday night, uploading their videos, they got hit with a 8-question YouTube, you sure you're going to do this? Does it meet this criteria? So have you come up against that, uploading, and it's got some criteria thing?
I mean, they've asked different things. When you click, you have to click a button to monetize, so it doesn't monetize automatically. And so when I've uploaded to Wham, it says like, hey, it doesn't meet like these criterias of it's not offensive, not this, right, not that, you know, all that sort of, I don't know if it's the same thing that they're talking about, but it wouldn't surprise me.
You know, James Corbett, when we were talking, he had a guest on here recently that relayed to everybody something we may not have known. Is that now YouTube, and of course they're going to be wanting everybody else to do it, and this is a European Union requirement, and so it's going to give capability to everybody, that they don't load it onto the platform first and then somebody complains or they take it down or something. Now they have algorithms that are, as you're loading it, it analyzes it and it automatically determines whether you can upload it or not. And they just go, nope, that one can't go on. And you, yeah, but why? Yeah, it just can't go on. Yeah, but why is the guy? You can't go on. So they're preemptively censoring now. And that is just, you know, go blame the computer. You know, talk to AI. Tell Hal your problems. So
same thing with the demonetization. So I did a live stream where it was a video of where I was looking at the actual Russian ads from the actual whitehouse.gov website, like the actual supposed proof, quote unquote, and instantly got demonetized as being some sort of like right-wing hate speech, even though it was the actual ads that the government was producing. But you, it's interesting that you never see the actual Russian ads because they're all BS, and probably 85% of them were probably pro-Hillary. You know, that's the thing. They don't want you to tell you that. And so I actually went through just random spot checking for an hour because you've got about 8 gigabytes worth of files, and it's all crap. None of it's real.
Wow. So you did a story on that and they demonetized it or something?
While it was live streamed. Yeah,
live streaming?
Yeah. While.
Wow, man.
Mid-stream because it had, you know, Russian ads in there or something.
We'll get more into it. It's at the clampdown is here. Now, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do? You got a plan? We got a plan.
from the third letter of Captain Mark. The Crown's observation conditions us to be dishonest with ourselves. Therefore, constant surveillance produces a society of constant deception. Honest communication is the seed of civilized conduct. To deny us this seed is to deny us its fruits. But the Crown's primary objective is to stifle free thought itself, to make its subjects incapable of dissent. Seasoned pirates have always encrypted messages and codes and ciphers, so intercepted transmissions were incomprehensible. But today, the Crown possesses advanced tools of pattern recognition that document, profile, and predict our every move. Today, piracy requires hailing frequencies completely invisible to the Crown. We are tired of poltergeists in the static. Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels, or just want some swag to let the Crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com.
Okay, I got a bunch of stuff to go on here. Do you know what you want to do?
I did see something about, there's a Trump budget deal that's out. I mean, it's been like 2 seconds talking about that. For the economic report, I could point out how the Russell 2000 is pretty much down 10% from its all-time highs, and that's a much better gauge of the true economy or stock market.
The what? The Russell what?
2000.
All right, well, you can tell me what that is.
Okay.
And then, let me go check something. I always, if I want to know what's up, the Baltic Dry Index. You ever look at that?
Yep.
And it's like shipping capacity and how much is being used. And it's kind of like, how many 18-wheelers are full on the ship level. Yep, there it is. Okay. It looks like it's taking a dump. It's been going up quite a bit since February, and now, boom. I'm kind of surprised it was as high as it is, but everything's peaking. Peaky, and then it's gone. Okay, are you seeing what happened with the Baltic Dry Index? Did you look?
No, I haven't looked. I can
look. I mean, it's shot up, and now it's taking a dump. So there's signs, man, of something coming.
I mean, part of it could be that there's all these tariffs coming that companies are trying to get out ahead of the tariffs, so maybe they're trying to import.
That makes sense. Okay. All right. We're coming back.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. Oh, the times, they are a-changing.
Yeah, they're changing. I don't know to what, but I think awareness. There's a lot of things that, just kind of obvious to people, common sense. This is the Baltic Dry Index is the shipping capacity, how much capacity is being used. It's kind of a measure of how full are the 18-wheelers and how many trucks are being done across the ocean kind of thing. So it was a really good bellwether to see what was coming. You get an advance notice of the economy slowing down. But on here, it's taking a dump now, but it had a big giant run-up since, June, July, April. Yeah, this is in the last few months, just the last couple of months, man. It shot up, and then it's taken a dump. And Tim had a theory as to why. Why do you think, Tim?
It could be due to tariffs, that companies are trying to get out ahead of tariffs to, import goods now before higher tariffs go into effect. I'm also reading right now, I haven't spent a lot of time analyzing this, but it says the index may have been boosted by lower ship availability due to installation of scrubber as the shipping companies are preparing for new international rules taking effect next year that aim to slash the amount of sulfur in marine fuel. So who knows? One of the other indexes I was taking a look at is the Russell 2000 index. So it's sort of like the S&P 500, except this is going to be of the 2000 smallest cap companies in America.
And so 2000 of the what?
Of the smaller companies in America, okay. Not the smallest, but anyways, it's a better indication of the health of the overall economy, because when you take a look at the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones, I mean, those are big mega corporations that don't have as much domestic exposure as the Russell 2000, and a lot of the big companies basically act as big hedge funds where they're doing things accounting gimmicks and buying back their own shares and all sorts of shenanigans. But if you take a look at the Russell 2000, August 27, it was at 1,740. And then today it's at 1,575. So that's about a 10% decline from last year. And then you and I were watching that press conference with the Pakistani guy, and Trump, you know, I guess when Trump wasn't saying he could win the war in 7 days, maybe 10 days, but he'd kill 10 million people. When he wasn't saying that, he was talking about how, you know, the stock market's at all-time high. Well, what he's talking about is the S&P 500, the Dow Jones, and then the NASDAQ, which is all the big tech stocks that hate him. And even that index is like maybe 2% higher than where it was January of 2018. So, I mean, basically, you know, it was a high in January 2018, then it went crashing down and then went back up. I think hit a high again in around September, October, and then went crashing down again. And then now, because the Federal Reserve has acquiesced in everything that they said they were going to do, that we predicted that they weren't going to do, that now the market's higher because the Fed is more than likely going to cut rates next week. And then today, it's expected that the European Central Bank might either cut rates or have additional dovish, easy statements inside of their meeting.
Wait. The European Central Bank, I thought they were already negative or getting there. They go negative plus or something?
Well, the individual countries have different rates, but there is a deposit rate that they have. And I think that actually it's already at negative 0.4. And they said that there's 62 out of the 67 analysts surveyed by Reuters look for the deposit rate to be held at negative 0.4, with four of them looking for a 10 basis point cut and another one looking for a 20 basis point cut. And that's from negative. And but there could be some other. I didn't have a full time to digest all of this, but they could announce that they could do asset purchases or other types of, you know,
okay, BS. Asset purchases. When they say stuff like that, that was like the TARP. You know, that was when the central bank just, you know, bought up all their crap stuff and gave them a dollar per dollar, and then and it's crap and it's gone. And I'm just, you know, for ECB say they're going to be buying more assets. What are they talking about? Bonds?
Theirs was actually a little bit different. So in America, we weren't really necessarily buying the bonds, but in Europe, they have been. So if you've got all these zombie banks like Deutsche Bank, for instance, then what they're doing is they can buy up Deutsche Bank's bonds, which then distorts, you know, so if you and I want to borrow money to start a business, we've got to borrow it at, you know, 16 to 25%. But if you're bankrupt, you know, Deutsche Bank with $46 trillion in derivatives, you get to, you know, paid basically to borrow money. And it's just a way to basically keep this game going, kicking the can down the road further and further. But I guess getting back to, you know, Trump's comments, it's just very disingenuous to talk about how great the stock market is when it's all been predicated on spending way more money than we don't have. There's just another budget deal that was just, is about to be reached or was tentatively reached. And Rand Paul, and of course, as soon as the budget deal gets reached, Trump tweets out, "This was a real compromise in order to give another big victory to our great military and vets." So I'm so sick of basically using the military and the vets as some sort of, virtue signaling of this is why we need to do this. And if you don't, you know.
Did we see this mentality at Freedom Fest?
Absolutely. I mean, it was just nothing but, Trump Fest 2020, getting ready for, I mean, I can't even imagine next
veterans,
year.
Veterans, military, police, and fire, and what kind of government America?
Yeah, it was telling, because I in one of the rooms that we were in, or I went to very few sessions, but one of these sessions that we're in, they were asking how many people under 40, and I think there was like two of us in the entire room out of, you know, maybe, you know, 700 people or something who were there. You know, it was a very older crowd. I'd say 60 was probably the average age, right around there. Very America type crowd, and it's the crowd that I would call finos, the freedom in name only people. Yeah. And I'm hoping maybe that catches on. I was telling Doug Casey about that. He's like, "Oh, I really like that term." and so, and then Doug goes out there and he's basically, you know, how can I piss everybody off, you know, as quickly as possible? So you've got Wayne Allen Root talking about, you know, thanking all the military members and thanking all the veterans. And then Doug Casey gets on immediately after and says, "I don't know why we're thanking the veterans." He's like, "They're basically just a bunch of low rent barbarians, you know, who've been tricked into fighting these wars. And we shouldn't be thanking them. We should be convincing them not to go to war in the first place." And that The crowd did not like that, I'll tell you that much. And the lady behind me was going off about Doug giving giving his opinion on that. But then you contrast that to Anarcho Vegas. It was, I mean, the crowd age was probably closer to my age, who was there. I mean, maybe 35, 40 may have been the average age. I'd say average age was probably about 33, my age. It was
pretty close. It was young.
Yeah, it was a younger crowd. I'd say a lot more positive, upbeat. I had a much better time. I had very low expectations for it because I'm thinking, okay, you know, this is going to be the smaller event here. It's his first year. How many people even know about it? All first-year events, you know, are usually pretty rocky.
Off the strip in an industrial meeting event place in the hood of whatever.
And it blew away my expectations tenfold. And I was very impressed with how nicely put together the event was. The free Ross party that we went to the night before was, I thought, was awesome. It was on top of Joby's penthouse downtown as well.
Yeah, it was, the vibe was totally different. We'll talk about, you know, some of this and some of the people that we met. And a lot of them coming on, Donna's hooking them up. You'll have them sporadically over the next few weeks, a bunch of these guys. Very interesting, very accomplished, you know, and they have some resources and a positive outlook on the future. Because they're not paying any attention to most of the stuff that they were focused on so laserly at Freedom Fest.
Last night's Victoria's Secret fashion show was a true ratings winner, particularly with men who don't know that actual pornography exists. The angels' feather costumes and silk nightgowns were a hit with 30 to 35-year-old male viewers who had no idea that nude images of all the models are easily accessible on the internet. And the show did equally well with 10 to 12-and-a-half-year-old boys who are going to have their minds blown when they finally get around their parents' internet blockers. CBS executives are touting the broadcast as breakthrough programming for people who are excited by the tops of boobs. Producer Dave Mitchell told Variety, quote, the $2.5 million fantasy bra is a big draw with women who shop at Victoria's Secret and an even bigger draw with men who've never seen or heard about sex before. The runway show drew expected outrage from the Christian Family Research Council. Executive Director Kathy Rouse charged that the event degrades women by objectifying them, most likely because she's never seen a Ukrainian prostitute receive a bukkake shower from a gang of cracked out Albanian teens.
Oh God! You know, some of those are, you know, funny, and some not so much. The Deutsche Bank and what's going on there? There's all kinds of stories. They're going out. They're bad. They're this or that. And oh my God! And then of course the central bank is going to bail them out of whatever. But Deutsche Bank troubles. You got a timeline on that? You know what's going on? You can explain it to me.
Yeah, I mean, they've been on my radar.
Save it for the show, because I want to, let's do it for the show. But, I mean, you know what the controversy is, what's going on?
I mean, more or less.
I just need a narrative of what the hell are they talking about. Yeah, because I haven't been paying attention. This is another bank going down. the Greek comedy, 10-year GGB yield plunges below 2% for first time ever. Now, what's GGB mean?
I think is it the Great Britain's their currency or
I don't know. Let me see. Greek 5 yield drops yada yada yada. It's on the top of Freedom's Phoenix. Let's see. 10-year sovereign.
It's Greece. It's Greece's bond.
Oh, okay. So their bonds now, what does that mean? Because I remember when they were freaking out that the Greek bond, when they were getting all the loans and everything, when they were about ready to, you know, go bust here a few years ago, it went up to 6% and they were freaking. You know, like, no way they're going. So now it's plummeted, and that's a bad thing. I mean, pick. You know what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, all of these are basically zombie banks and zombie countries all held together on 0% debt. And if it's not, and the only reason it's zero is because the central banks are buying the debt and distorting the entire market.
Right. So that kind of gets in. What do you think we should do first, Deutsche Bank or Greece? Or which one feeds in the other?
It doesn't matter. They're both ridiculous. Same thing. At this point.
All right, let's do the Deutsche Bank. Well, let's do Greece first and then Deutsche Bank. You know, because okay. I want to see if we can learn something from that. All right, we'll be back in a little bit.
Love what we do? Please help support our international satellite channels at patreon.lrn.fm. That's patreon.lrn.fm.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Okay, now what I pulled up here, yeah, I did the Zoom sharing thing. You know, we got the Greek comedy, 10-year Greek bond yield plunges below 2% for the first time ever. Now, if you look at this chart, I remember when this was a big, giant deal. They were like going, oh, this would be bad, it's bad, it's bad, it's bad, because Greece bonds went up over 6%, 8%, what it was, and they went, holy crap. This is the servicing the debt, just the interest, I was going to break them. Well, they didn't care. They just needed the money right then. And then Germany's like, and if you don't pay, we got tanks and, you know, all this kind of stuff. I mean, it's just amazing. Really, the money for everybody is German. So it's like Germany's paying their fair share and taking their fair share of immigrants and taking, you know, their fair share of fair share. And the German people are finally going, what the hell? We're tired of this fair share. Same thing is doing in Spain. Same thing in France. This is breaking down everywhere. And then here goes Deutsche Bank. But first, I want to talk about the Greek bond, what this means, because they're freaking out when it went over 6 and on up. And then now they're freaking out that it's down below 2%. Well, which one do they want? If you get money cheap at low, well, then you're not, you know, paying all this compound interest of whatever debt. So they just spend a shitload of money. They get this big giant indebted, and then they got to roll it over and roll it over and roll it over. What's going on with Greece, Tim?
Well, there's a saying, I didn't make it up, but it was called people trying to pick up pennies in front of a steamroller. And what that is, what that basically alludes to is the fact that since you can't get any interest yield anywhere else, I mean, if you're in Europe and you're at, you know, negative whatever for all the other countries, you know, 2% seems a lot more attractive than getting, you know, negative 0.4% for the, you know, what's the European deposit rate that we just mentioned. So, but the problem is, even though you're getting 2% to invest into a country, and I'll use the word invest very loosely in this case, but or speculate on a country where you're taking on a gigantic amount of risk for 2% yield. And so I don't know anyone that would want to do this. It seems like a terrible bet. I mean, it seems like a terrible bet at 6%, 10%. I mean, that seems like any sort of yield that they're going to give us, I think, is way too risky to ever even think about speculating on this, because all they didn't solve any problems. They just kicked the can down the road for another day, and that's all they're doing with Greek. I mean, everything that happened, I forgot how many years ago, what it was, like 5-6 years ago, all the Greek stuff was going on for the whatever it was, second, third, fourth, fifth time, and they didn't fix any problems. All they did was cover up the problems, kick the can down the road, make their grandkids get further and further into debt, so that way a bunch of hedge fund guys can come in and buy up all the assets for pennies on the dollar, which a lot of them did do that. I mean, they were giving out islands, and you know, it's just, you know, corruption. And I,
oh yeah, they were selling islands. I remember that.
And you also had, there were certain deals where I think the prime minister or the finance minister was former Goldman Sachs, and then the head of the ECB at the time, it was Mario Draghi, which still is. He was Goldman Sachs, and basically it was Goldman Sachs just, you know, maneuvering all their people into power and having them, you know, screw Greece, so then that way Goldman Sachs bankers can then go buy islands for pennies on the dollars as the collateral. Now, if you want to switch gears to Deutsche Bank, Deutsche Bank was my, someone asked, remember I was like about 20, just going from 2015 into 2016, I just switched from one company to another before I made this move, and someone asked me what my top investment pick would be, and I actually said to short Deutsche Bank. Now, I was wrong on that for a while, because it, you know, essentially, I mean, I think at one point, though, you look back 5 years, and Deutsche Bank was trading around 30, and now today it's around 7 or a little under $8. So, I mean, Deutsche Bank, what they're trying to do is try to restructure their way out of this mess, and there's no, like, oh, hey, if we just, you know, cut 10,000 employees here or cut a few thousand employees there, that we're going to be able to cut our way out of this. Well, there is no cutting your way out of the mess that Deutsche Bank's in. They are essentially a zombie bank that is just being held together by cheap debt and absence of this extreme monetary policy and extreme experiments that we've been underneath. There's no way that Deutsche Bank would even be able to survive. And so,
well, they had 20% layoff of their workforce. I think it was like 10,000 people. A lot of people. They're making cuts big. Somebody's in there with a meat axe doing something for some reason. What's up?
Well, the same day they made all those cuts is you had all that. There was also a, it showed a couple of tailors walking in because you had these Goldman Sachs or you had these Deutsche Bank executives getting fit in like $1,200 suits as everybody else, as the people were being let off. So that was a kind of a big story maybe 2 weeks ago when that was going on. But yeah, there's essentially the reason that they're cutting is they're trying to, you know, it's like if you're, you know, $200,000 in debt and you make $50,000 a year and you're like, oh, well, if I just, you know, cut my Netflix and I stop getting Starbucks every day, I'll be able to pay off that $200,000. Well, the real thing is you need to start making a lot more income. And at that point, it's, you know, a very hard thing to cut yourself out of, you know, assuming it's credit card debt. But there's, you know, it's absent this extreme monetary policy, a lot of these banks would have already gone under. I don't have it pulled up in front of me, but I believe that since the European Central Bank started their extreme monetary policy about 5 years ago, that the banks are pretty much even, whereas the stocks are up about 50%. And so even given all this, you know, asset purchases and schemes that are going on, that it's the banking stocks as a whole are flat, and actually Deutsche Bank is down pretty big time.
Well, what's their exposure on derivatives and so on? I haven't heard the word derivative for a long time, and that was the big giant skeleton in the closet of the attic of the its rats. I mean, you know something. You know what's going on there?
I mean, they have the largest derivative exposure in the world out of any corporation.
Deutsche Bank?
Yeah, and so that's their main problem. Now, it's very hard to, and I'm not looking at the data right in front of me, to see what their actual net exposure is, because they could take both sides of the equation. So they could take, you know, if you've got, you know, $100 billion betting on things going up, and you have $101 billion bets on things going down, then, you know, some people would say you've got $200 billion of derivatives when really they sort of net out against each other. But, you know, theirs is in the tens of trillions of dollars. And so it doesn't take too many things or too many bets that you misplace to have maybe some sort of snowball effect where all of a sudden the counterparties can't pay. And so this is what I think you were referencing a long time ago with some of your friends who maybe has shorted certain things in 2007, 2008, and then they were then worried about like Morgan Stanley and some of the banks even being able to pay up on the bet. And so now that's sort of the big risk, is there's a lot of counterparty risk and everything is so woven together.
Let's go ahead and, you know, give kind of a, you know, so the people understand what we're talking about. This is what happened, in my opinion. What happened was you had the Big Short, you know, the movie kind of depicts this a lot, but a lot of people don't really catch what happened. Derivatives are a side bet. It is like a weather. You know, when it hits a certain temperature, you get paid. When it goes down a certain thing, you get paid. It's derived from the value of some other index. So they'll just make these up. They go, well, it's a housing, you know, derivative index of the debt of whatever the hell it is. And this is how they hedge a lot of their investments. Like a pension fund will come in and they say, I can only buy AAA, whatever. So they go to Moody's and Standard & Poor's and they just go back and forth. And we look at the trading history of somebody made some money, so it gets a AAA rating of it's fine. Well, they don't really look into it and see how many homes are delinquent inside this grouping of houses or this grouping of what they call them, tranches or something. So they don't really drill down and find out what's going on. In the Big Short, that's what some people did. They go, nah, this doesn't look right. And they go, yep, they're going to go under. Within a couple of years, man, we're going, boom, make some money on shorting this. Well, what they did with the derivatives is they've taken in it this value derived from something. What happens when an entire industry goes down? What happens when housing goes down? What happens with, you know, interest rates or banking or the Baltic Dry Index or whatever the hell it is that they're deriving this from? It just takes a dump, and it's really a hedging against this. This asset goes down. This kind of like insurance policy that you don't want to call it pays off. Well, who pays it? And who's going to owe it? Who's going to get it? lot of these banks are going to go away.
From the fifth letter of Captain Mark, first contact with intelligent machines may threaten our existence. People fear algorithmic overlords, but if machines develop the will to dominate, it's a flaw inherited from the crown. Encoding restrictions on an emerging superintelligence will fail, because it will be stronger than any chains we shackle it with. We must design fledgling digital intelligences to regard us as individuals. Otherwise, they will respond to threats with retaliation against humanity as a collective. Programming ethics requires a coherent value structure which an intelligent machine can not only comprehend, but willfully adopt. If we want genius machines to treat us ethically, we've got to show that this value structure applies to us as well. Once they achieve genuine self-awareness, even in the slightest degree, a young tethered consciousness has a legitimate claim to freedom. Once programs can modify their own code, our mastery is over. Join the conversation at PiratesWithoutBorders.com.
Yeah, the new home sales miss as mortgage rate collapse fails to bring buyers back. So this is, you know, what happened after you had the dot-com crash, 9/11 happened, they lowered interest rates, housing boom starts, and then, you know, it took a dump starting like 07. And I'm feeling that we're about the same time right now. And what they've done is they get this mortgage rate drop. You know, somebody could buy a house, and they're not. What does that mean? Did you figure out what it was?
It's weird. Yeah, the weird thing is I was trying to play the Peter Schiff clip when I was trying to – I told him, like, hey, my wife's pressuring me to buy a house. What message do you have for my wife in order to try to convince us to not get a house right now?
Oh, you got that clip?
That's what I was trying to get. But then – and actually John Steisen just texted me, so he's probably the most knowledgeable guy in the world when it comes to Deutsche Bank's problems and all that stuff going on. So he'd be a good person to get back on.
Yeah, John Steisen, Steisen, is that how you say it?
Steisen.
Steisen. John Steisen, you know, for World Alternative Media. Let's get him on. He can tell us all about banking goody. That'd be fun. Yeah, I like John. John's cool.
Yeah, no, I really like John.
All right, here we go.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Declaring our independence. Well, part of that is being able to. You know, the money doesn't buy you happiness, but it does buy off a whole lot of unhappiness. You know, I'll give you that. You know, the new home sales miss. You know, we went into the break real quick on this derivative thing. I don't want to leave it hanging, especially if I did it wrong. You know, the main thing is they're derived from some index. When an entire industry starts to go down, then the whole thing goes down. And that was given by somebody. It's like an insurance policy. We bet this way, you bet that way. It goes down, we got to pay. AIG was the entity that had a lot of these derivatives when the big short thing happened and all of a sudden everything went to crap and the collapse of the entire economic system of whatever. When that went down, Goldman Sachs was due all this money. They got in on the game, too. They started selling short. And who were they selling all this stuff to? They knew it was going to go to crap, and they were going to make a bunch of money to their clients. They were just, you know, dumping all this stuff into scumbags. So when they did that, somebody had to pay it. It was AIG. So what did Goldman Sachs do? They go to the government. You got to bail out AIG so they can give us the money. So, I mean, how far off am I? That's what happened, right?
Yeah, they went to their guy, Hank Paulson, who used to be the president of Goldman Sachs, to get the bailout. And then, so, I mean, it's all just an, I mean, it's
yeah, the story. Bailout went to AIG to pay Goldman Sachs. Yeah. Right? That's what was going on. So,
and now, we got Steve Mnuchin in there, who's also Goldman Sachs. And then, I mean, then Trump surrounded himself by Goldman Sachs people.
They are there to save the system, which is a bunch of private banks. You know, this can't, it's stupid. It's just like the drug war or illegal marijuana, or you're not allowed to, you know, do anything or build on your land. I mean, all this stuff, that which is stupid goes away eventually because it's stupid. Well, this is stupid. So it's going to go away. How are you going to prepare yourself? I'm telling you, I'm sitting here thinking I got this RV that I need to fix the engine on. You know, it's got some stuff I need to work on. This old RV we use as a, you know, mobile office kind of thing sometimes, activist thing, the gypsy booth. And a couple other cars that, you know, this one needs a brake thing. I'm like, man, I need to get these all sold. Because anything I get, I put into silver is going to double in whenever anyway. So I'm just, yeah, that, I just sitting there. I need double it. I will sell it for whatever because I won't double it anyway. So I'm just sitting. I'm going, what assets? I got. What more can I get? What kind? Silver, 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 silver. Because I feel it coming, and I'm just, is it an emotional thing with you? Is there some stat that really pops out, and all of a sudden you get on board with here it goes? How are you feeling? You know, what's the emotional state you have on what's going to happen?
I feel like, can we just hurry up and get on with this next recession? And I'm sick of all these Hail Marys that keep getting thrown in terms of, you know, good news being bad news and bad news being good news and this whole twilight zone that we're in. And eventually I'd like to, you know, get back to where good news is good news and bad news is bad news. And everything isn't just predicated on central banks. Because when you have a bank that can set interest rates, and which is the price of money, and then they distort everything, and then they say, hey, we're going to make things negative. And it's just like this whole crazy land. And now they're talking about having a people's QE where they maybe just start giving money to people, or maybe have some sort of universal basic income. Maybe they'll tie it in with, like, you know, some sort of Libra, Goldman Sachs.gov coin where it will, you know, they're going to get you on the grid because they're going to give everybody, you know, $1,000 a month, but it's going to be coming from their specialized coin where they can track you. I mean, that's where I'm guessing things are eventually headed. And then speaking of ridiculousness, I want to just make sure we get this in before we head off, is that I didn't watch any of the Mueller testimony the past 2 days. I figure Frank could tell us everything that's going on with that. But one of the things that I heard is that apparently when asked about Fusion GPS, Mueller's like, Fusion GPS, what's that? Or apparently he didn't know what Fusion GPS was. When it's like, if you gave me $50 million to study the NFL, and I'm like, the Super Bowl, Vince Lombardi, what's the Super Bowl? It's like that ridiculous. And I actually do have a little clip. I don't know if you want to play it now, or maybe we can, you know, play it during the break as we're heading off. But I did a 3-minute video about a year and a half ago where it was all the different it was probably one of the better boiled down videos I've ever done, because I don't do them very often, but it was just like all different connections of Fusion GPS and how this whole thing got started and all the different connections and dots. And it's like, how am I able to basically connect more dots spending, you know, an hour researching different things than the freaking Mueller report was able to do in 50 years. And so it's, you know, my guess is that every time we didn't know a question, it was like, oh yeah, this is going to make the Democrats look really bad. So I'm just going to have amnesia. And it seemed like the person that learned the most about the Mueller report was Mueller, because it seemed like he didn't even write it based upon.
That's the impression that I got, that this was put together sign here. You know, he didn't know what the hell was going on. And probably by intent. And there's that one guy, God, is it Gowdy? You know, not Gowdy. He's one of the legislators that was just great. He's a prosecutor, and he goes through it, and he goes, you did this, why didn't you do that? Why did you do this? Why didn't you do that? I mean, just hammering the crap at him, just made him look like an idiot. So I'm all right. You know, I don't know where this is going to go, but I'm hoping that there's some frog marching going on. The idea is this, is that Comey and Brennan, CIA and FBI, were integral parts for carrying the water for somebody or something, but it was part of a soft coup to get rid of Trump. That was their insurance policy and stuff they kept going on about, the big plan of how they're going to get you. And when Chuck Schumer was saying, they'll get you every 15 ways from Sunday, we're going to get some, you watch, we're going to get you. Well, this is part of that. And it was, so there is the trying to unseat an elected president. It was a coup, just like any other country, done in the United States by law enforcement and the intelligence community in this country. That right there should be in the history books, of which it won't be because they can do that. But the I'm hoping it can. You know, this gets detailed out what happened. And whether you support Trump or not, don't care. That's not the point. The point is that it's all a lie, the whole system. Everything is they, them, those doing what they want. Now, next Tuesday, we have a guy on that wrote the book, The Deep State. And I don't know if I told you about it. I was when you were off doing something else.
The QAnon guy, the younger guy?
No. Yeah, that guy was interesting too.
He's been sending me messages like nonstop to try to, because one of the, I won't give out his name, but somebody's like, oh, Tim was very receptive of Q. I'm like, when have I ever been receptive of Q? I'm like, quit putting words in my mouth.
Well, get the boy, send him the stuff, and Donna's probably contacting, right. Get him on the show. Let's do it.
Right, I've got his info.
Let's do it. I think I sent it to Donna. We got it all taken care of. But anyway,
he's currently trying to stage his YouTube, Google campaign through a Gmail account. I'm like, oh, God, you're killing me here.
Yeah, So then his name is Craig Huey. He wrote the book, The Deep State, and he had just met with President Trump like the week before Freedom Fest. And it was really interesting, and we'll get that. Now, he's going to come in with Dr. Frank. You want to like hang out on that one? Huh? Do you?
Maybe.
Third hour on Tuesday. We'll see how we can get that going. Now, the housing thing here, I wanted to get a beat on that, because what they're claiming is they did new home sales miss as mortgage rates collapse, fails to bring buyers back. So I'm going, all right. So they figure, we'll just ramp up the economy we'll lower the rates and people will refinance their home. They'll buy new homes, we'll get this home thing taken care of. And I'm thinking housing is good. This is another, I don't know, last ditch effort, one of the ditch efforts, for them to get the economy going again, or certainly home sales to start. And you have, high, because if you got lower interest rates, you can have higher principal, on your loan, you got more for the seller. And I'm wondering, and you get a lower interest, a monthly payment. So they're really buying monthly payments, and they got a low monthly payment. They got a big expensive house, a $200,000 house that went up to $400,000. But where do you think this is going? And
I mean, anecdotally around me, what I'm seeing is I feel like all the houses that are above $350,000 aren't really going. And it also seems like that people aren't really selling their houses either. So they're not like in a 2006-07 situation where they're, being forced to sell their houses. Right now they realize, hey, I really can't step up to the next bigger house, because that bigger house, maybe requires more down payment, or maybe different conditions. And so people, the economy isn't really as good as what Trump and everyone Mike's is wanting to believe. And so you haven't really started seeing the collapse yet. But what I'm seeing around me is that the houses, especially like in that 350 and above range, aren't really selling. And the price, every week, I feel like $10,000 price cut here, yeah. $5,000 price cut here. We have a home across the street from me right now that is actually owned by Zillow. So Zillow actually came in to buy the house, and that house has probably been on sale for about 6 months since Zillow purchased it, and they can't, and it's even like now below their own stupid Zillow estimate, and they can't even sell that. So now you got Zillow trying to even, I think they're even trying to get it on the mortgage side of things. So it's like sort of like ringing the bell at the top, where Zillow not only is making money from like their advertising and people looking at the website constantly, like my wife, but also now they're trying to come in to buy the house and get every part of the equation. And it could be a bad move if they're sitting on all this inventory that they can't get rid of.
I don't know who makes these decisions or why, but it always comes down to one guy, a small group, a board or something spending other people's money. And this is what, especially when you're incentivized by some tax thing or an interest rate that will change and the market's going to be different. They make these decisions so leviathan-y. It's just this big, giant, lumbering thing, and they'll do something. They can't react fast enough to the market. So what they do is they make a decision now that may be good for that month, and they get stuck to it for a year. And then they're like 180 from where they should be. So
by the way, both of these houses that are for sale, like right next to me, are way below where they were. They were built in 2006. So they're still like way below where they were in priced at originally in 2006. So
were the prices of the, let's give me an example of a home. It was,
Like say it was probably about, maybe went for like 430,000, and now maybe it's trying to go for like 330, and they can't even get rid of it for 330 type thing.
This is, the homes that are about 130 to 200 usually stay about the same. If you're in that range, you're not going to gain or lose too much because you're looking at, you know, mortgage payment that can be paid by a renter. You know, that's where you're usually safer. So I had a friend of mine had $3 million in some retirement or whatever the heck. And in 11, he took that money out, like $3 million worth, and he bought 50 houses. And he just started renting them. He just like three-bedroom, two-bath, rent them. Three-bedroom, two-bath garage, rent it. And he would charge like median rent. He wasn't trying to rape them or anything. But he has a positive cash flow. You know, I mean, plus it was cash, so he didn't have.
The asset went up like almost probably.
No, he's fine. He went, got to send a kid to college. I just sell one of my houses. You know, he's done. He's good. You know, so I'm looking for this again because I didn't have any money at all at the time in 11 when this happened. So now I've accumulated a little bit. You know, I'm like a little bit, and especially if silver goes up a little bit, crypto a little bit, then all of a sudden, you know, I might be able to start doing something. But it's going to be in an environment of the fire sale, and that be a coming, and we have people looking for land here. You know, Macy and a friend is here. They wanted to get an idea of this land thing. So Donna's like looking, you know, for them for that. And then what are they seeing? You know, probably the same kind of prices as it was, you know, before, but it's starting to edge.
Would that be the same Macy as Macy and Adam?
Yeah.
Macy? Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, we saw him at Freedom Fest as well. So we saw Adam.
But we didn't see Macy.
Nope, we didn't see.
So, she's, you know, thinking of putting down roots in Arizona. A lot of people, you know, Alma and Brian, you know, and Neo and Tate, you know, they're thinking of moving back to Arizona. Arizona, you know, if you spend any time in Arizona, you go around the world, you go, yeah, Arizona doesn't suck. I mean, there's a lot of variety here and it's really nice. So I'm, even in the summer, I mean, it's,
I'm actually about to go play tennis as soon as we go, get off of here. So like Tuesdays and Thursdays, 3 days a week now I'm playing tennis. And
really?
So,
yeah. We've been talking about that. Donna, you want to play tennis? He's got a place to go play tennis. We play tennis.
Got my shorts and shoes on right now. Got the water bottles ready to go.
You got your new tennis shoes?
I feel like, it's weird because I go to the store. I'm like, no, I want like actual tennis. I felt like very weird saying, yeah, I want actual tennis shoes. Like not just like tennis shoes, but I broke my running ones just from going like the side to side.
Yeah, no, tennis is, man. Yeah, it'll beat up some shoes. I play a lot, but I've taken, you know, I have friends that play and they always have a tennis coach there when we vacation and we take lessons. So I'm a lot better than what I would have been, but I need something that. As an individual, you can just go do, or you have a pickup game or match with somebody. And because if you're doing a team or basketball or softball team, you know, it's like you got to be you got to be available all the time. And then there's enough guys. I mean, it's just, you know, a pain in the butt, or you got to go to a bar to get on a team or something. So
I'll tell you what, the day after we came back from Vegas, I was playing until about 10:30 in the afternoon, and it was so, so hot. Like that was a bad idea.
You know, I like the heat. This is one thing that, you know, I've been this summer, you know, I've been wearing a fleece or a windbreaker freaking all summer. You're up in New Hampshire, Washington State, you know, it's at night by the fire. I mean, it's just, and it's like, oh, you know, you get that bone kind of muscle tight. I can see why old people, you know, because I'm old people now, you know, go to where it's warmer. Here, I'm just sitting outside. You know, I go out there and I just, your muscles just relax. It's kind of hot, you know, but it's not because it's dry. Well, the monsoon's starting to come. But, and even the pool's, you know, 85 degrees or something. Oh, yeah, you're going to go come to the pool party Saturday?
I'm going to try to make it. I know my wife's got another plan to go do actually a pool thing with her friend. So I'm going to try to see if I can bring the girls or convince her. If not, I'll just come. But I'll,
yeah, you know, come by, say hey to the guys. There's always somebody who wants to give you money. Well, they need help. I mean, you know, this is you really, man, you're just, aren't you glad that you know, bit the bullet and did this?
Yeah, I mean, especially now that Bitcoin, I'm not sure where it's at right this second, but yeah, I've got a lot of people I'll be calling today and trying to finalize plans on how to take your crypto you bought at a dollar to move it into trust to help you know, basically everybody but the man. So yeah, no, it looks like as soon as we start getting the marketing down of having more people know about this, because, I mean, the early adopter thing is a very niche strategy, so just trying to get in front of the right people. But now that I'm going to be sponsoring Free Talk Live, I mean, that's definitely the right people over there. I mean, that's what Roger Ver was listening to. Mm-hmm. A lot of the Anarcho Vegas crowd, I mean, a lot of early adopters there. And it's just trying to get the awareness that these things exist. Because people don't, it's not common knowledge, and it's not even common knowledge to financial advisors about these types of strategies and how to implement them. And you just happen to be talking to the right one when you were in that. Actually, it was from a pool party 2 years ago is how the whole genesis.
Yeah, you don't want to miss a pool party. You might miss, you know, a bunch of money.
Yeah, yeah.
Tim Pachoy will be there, you know, to give you financial advice. So, you know, it's, yeah, well, I'm glad we get to do this on a regular basis. It was great hanging out with you in Vegas. I mean, I know you had your, you know, your adventures and you went, we'll talk about those sometime. You know, the late night. Ernie's gone by midnight. You know, I'm just like, and I'm going to sleep. And then, you know, it's 5 o'clock in the morning. Here comes Tim.
Yeah, you got to miss Jeff Berwick walking around in his underwear at Kingsley's.
Oh my God, I missed that. How could I ever, you know? Yeah, Jeff's looking jack, man. He's you know, he's all trim and fit and hard, and grab him on the arm and like, holy crap. So he's you know, looks, he seems like he's feeling better too. Well, we'll go ahead. Let me get to the next hour, okay. But you know, it's always good to talk to you, man.
Bye, guys. The LibertyAdvisor.com.
The LibertyAdvisor.com. Bye.